From the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
One of the things I try to avoid on this show is to be hyperbolic. And when people are going crazy about something and it's really no big deal, I try to just say, this is really not that big of a deal. Let's talk about it, but let's talk about it in sort of sober and reasonable terms. But that is very much not the case when it comes to the peril that is on the horizon. If Republicans were to win the 2022 midterm elections in what are just a few months now, quite frankly. And when I say democracy is in jeopardy if Republicans take the House in 2022, I say it with the caveat that this is not a hyperbolic claim. And increasingly, I mean, the bad thing is that democracy is in peril if Republicans win. The good thing is increasingly people are understanding this peril and this risk. Republicans and Democrats, who are so similar on so many issues, we've talked about it before. Here's a whole bunch of issues on which there's really no significant difference between Republicans and Democrats. How could it be that if Republicans take one chamber of Congress, it would have such a major impact? And the answer is that it is because of the destructive potential that the series of events that could be unleashed by Republicans taking control of the House is so significant that it could be the catalyst for a disaster for democracy. And let's just think it through. First, we know that Republicans see their 2020 failure as a failure to steal the election. What I mean by that is when you hear Republicans talk about 2020, most of them, I mean, okay, Mitt Romney's the exception. Liz Cheney's the exception. But for the most part, when you hear Trump, people associated with the Trump White House, the more weaponized Republicans in the House and Senate, when they talk about what happened in 2020, their view is we just didn't do enough to take the election from the guy who won it. They don't think, you know, next time we should really win by appealing to more voters. and getting more people to vote for us. That would be the normal reaction. That would be the pro-democracy reaction. Not enough. We didn't convince enough people. Let's be better at convincing people to vote for us. No, they think we can win next time by better working to take the election, even when we don't win it, using different techniques or being better with the techniques that we used in 2022, but we just didn't do enough of. So with a midterm 2022 win, they would be far better to carry out that upending of democracy in 2024. That's a very dangerous thing. Secondly, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Matt Gaetz, and others in that cohort have said, if we win in 2022, we're going to investigate Joe Biden. We're going to investigate Hunter Biden, who has nothing to do with the administration. We will end the January 6th committee if it's still going on. We will impeach Joe Biden and on and on and on. They've said that that's what they're going to do. Disaster. And thirdly, they've said if they win, they will quickly work to help the Trump rioters avoid consequences to any extent that they can, effectively rewarding the rioters for what they did on January 6th of 2021. Now, in response to this, Nancy Pelosi, who I am not a fan of, Nancy Pelosi recently said, quote, "It is absolutely essential for our democracy that we win. I fear for our democracy if the Republicans were ever to get the gavel. We can't let that happen." And some people are like, oh, she's being hyperbolic. But remember that Canadian political scientist Thomas Homer Dixon, who we interviewed recently, he also wrote and explained to us during the interview that the United States could be under a right-wing dictatorship by 2030. And when I asked him, well, what, talk to us about the sequence. What are the initial steps and the precursor steps to a right-wing dictatorship in 2030 include Trump winning in 2024. And a precursor to that would, of course, be Republicans taking the House in 2022. So the stakes are absolutely huge. And if we just say what's most likely, I'm not saying throw in the towel. I'm not saying don't try. If anything, what I'm saying is we've got to try. The more likely outcome, even though Nancy Pelosi won't admit it, is that Republicans take the House in 2022. If nothing significant changes, Republicans only have to flip 5 seats, remember, to take control of the House in November. That's the most likely outcome, that they are able to flip at least 5 seats. It is a very small margin of error for Democrats. Now, the other aspect to all of this is, of course, is the Department of Justice going to act at all to show that what took place in 2020 simply cannot happen again and truly hold people accountable? I have no emotional investment in Merrick Garland one way or the other, but it's increasingly looking like Merrick Garland is sort of spineless. And we're going to talk later. Trump is again asking Putin to help him find dirt on people. This time, Hunter Biden. We'll talk about that a little bit later in the show. But it doesn't seem Merrick Garland wants to do anything. We've got these Manhattan investigators who resigned, including Mark Pomerantz, saying, we had good evidence that Trump committed crimes. If we tried some of these cases, we would likely win. But it doesn't seem any charges are coming there, and multiple prosecutors have resigned as a result. A federal judge recently said, and we talked about it earlier this week, it's pretty apparent that Donald Trump committed felonies, and yet, what? Nothing? The Department of Justice seems to be completely feckless, and you have to understand that this is bigger than just Merrick Garland. In general, number one, the checks and balances that we have are checks and balances, but they never accounted for someone like Trump. They just didn't. And we talked about this during the Trump era. And the federal bureaucracy in general has never really held presidents accountable in any serious way. So about 10 different things have to happen, including Democrats earning more votes, the DOJ taking this seriously. And unfortunately, it sort of seems like many Democrats are more willing to allow the possibility of democracy dying than to take the gloves off and saying, hey, you know what? We do have to do some unprecedented things, but that's because we've already had unprecedented circumstances. The Trump presidency was already unprecedented. And when that's the case, you might have to take unprecedented action. Very scary times ahead. And it is not hyperbolic to say that democracy is in peril. as yet another example of this, let's talk about yet another request from Donald Trump to Vladimir Putin. So Trump is again asking Putin to help him find dirt. You might remember that Donald Trump previously said, Russia, if you're listening, you will be rewarded for hacking Hillary's emails and the DNC. And then within hours, that's exactly what Russia did. We are in the middle right now, globally, of a Russian invasion of Ukraine, an invasion of aggression, an illegal invasion, an invasion that doesn't respect the sovereignty of the Ukrainian people or of the Ukrainian borders. That's what's going on. And not only has Donald Trump praised Putin as a genius and savvy and smart early in the invasion, not only has Trump used very soft language about Putin, like saying recently that he's driven to put it together in reference to the invasion of Ukraine, Trump is now asking Putin, can you give us some dirt on Hunter Biden? Dozens of articles about this, including this article from Politico. Trump calls on Putin to release dirt on Hunter Biden. It's the latest example of the former president soliciting foreign governments to intervene to damage his domestic political rivals. Remember, he also withheld aid from Ukraine, wanting Ukraine to announce an investigation into the Biden family for the PR benefit. He ultimately was sort of shamed into giving Ukraine the military aid once that information leaked or broke. So Trump appears on Real America's Voice. We'll look at other pieces of this interview later in the show. And Trump says, you know, we're not going to get the truth about Hunter from Ukraine, but maybe Putin can give it to us. Listen to this. This is as crazy as it has been made out to be.
One thing while I'm on your show, as long as Putin now is not exactly a fan of our country, let him explain where did, because Chris Wallace wouldn't let me ask the question.
What?
Why did the mayor of Moscow's wife give the Bidens, both of them, $3.5 million? For, that's a lot of money. She gave him $3.5 million. So now I would think Putin would know the answer to that. I think he should release it. I think we should know that answer.
Wow.
Now, you won't get the answer from Ukraine, but why are they giving somebody who knows nothing about energy $187,000 a month plus a $3 million upfront payment? And I won't even talk about China because they haven't gone into Taiwan yet.
Right.
That'll be next.
I love the hosts nodding along like they have any idea what Trump is talking about.
But why did the mayor of Moscow's wife give the Biden family $3.5 million? Nobody wants to ask the question. And Chris Wallace, who's a total lightweight, unlike his father, who interviewed me for 60 minutes, who was actually a good piece. Mike Wallace was great. He wants to be Mike Wallace, but he doesn't have the talent. But why is it that the mayor of Moscow's wife gave the Biden family $3.5 million?
Now, of course, for people who are confused, why is Trump talking about a female horse? He's saying the mayor, not the mayor. Okay, just that could be just a New York accent thing. I know people in the audience will say, horses, what is he talking about? I know that we've lost our our capacity for shock, but the president of the United States is trying to fight Russia because Russia is invading Ukraine, fight through sanctions and fight through training. I'm talking about Joe Biden. While a former president of the United States, in the middle of that fight, is asking a NATO adversary that is illegally invading another country to help him politically. That's what Donald Trump is doing. And of course, this isn't the first time that Trump has done it. This is that famous time, the Russia, if you're listening, debacle.
Russia, if you're listening, I hope you're able to find the 30,000 emails that are missing. I think you will probably be rewarded mightily by our press.
And hours later, that is exactly what Russia is believed to have done. The difference is that this time, there may be less of a payoff to Russia to releasing so-called dirt if it exists on Hunter Biden, whereas there was a significant payoff back then because we know of Russia's preference for Trump over Hillary Clinton. So he's doing it again. Later in the show, we'll look at some other moments from this disturbing interview. Let me know your thoughts. Find me on Twitter at D. Pakman. The David Pakman Show is primarily funded by our audience, people who listen to the podcast, watch clips on YouTube, listen to the show on the radio, maybe on your local radio station. You can support our work by signing up at joinpakman.com, and we do an extra show every single day for our members. You can also now gift memberships to others. When you sign up, just check the box, "This is a gift membership." If you want to give the gift to someone specific, you can. If you leave it blank, we'll give it to someone. We've got a waiting list right now of 220 people who have requested memberships and can't afford them. So that is something that is available as well. JoinPakman.com. We must follow up. I am driven. I am determined to follow up about a story that is increasingly smelling like Watergate. Yesterday, I told you about these roughly 7 hours of missing call logs that the Trump White House has turned over to the January 6th committee investigating the Trump riots. So to reset the entire thing and get everybody on the same page. For a period of time now, the January 6th committee has been wanting the logs of who did Donald Trump speak to on January 6th. And it turns out that what was provided to the investigative committee is missing 7 hours. And as I told you yesterday, this was during some very key hours between 11:17 a.m. and 6:54 p.m. This is the most important time of the riots. It's from just before they started heading towards the Capitol through the period of time during which we now know Trump was being urged, even by people in his family like Ivanka, to call in the National Guard, tell people to go home, to the point at which Donald Trump gave that very mealy-mouthed and soft and squishy appeal to his followers to go home, even though they were completely right to be there, because the election, after all, was stolen, as Trump said, through to when people actually started leaving the Capitol. This is the key time. We're going to follow up in a moment on Donald Trump's claim that he doesn't know what a burner phone is, because one of the aspects of this is not only are 7 hours missing, even if Trump didn't make any phone calls on White House phones during that time, he clearly was talking to people and he may have been using burner phones. We're going to follow up about that in the next segment. But the first part of this is that Talking Points memo has done something fascinating, which is they have assembled media reports where others acknowledge speaking to Trump during that time. And they are now able to say with a high degree of certainty, here are at least some of the calls missing from the call logs. Now, whether they're missing because they're just missing and haven't been turned over, or whether they're missing because burner phones or other people's phones were used, we don't yet know. But this is very, very interesting. Talking Points memo. Trump was 100% making phone calls during the January 6th attack. Here's the list. And what they've done is they've assembled media reports and they've said, here are calls that have been acknowledged, which aren't recorded anywhere. So, for example, Mike Pence. The official records turned over to the committee don't include Trump's final call with Mike Pence on January 6th, during which the president made a last attempt to pressure Pence to illegally hijack the election certification process. Then Pence advisor General Keith Kellogg testified under oath about the conversation. The Washington Post reported on the call. Bob Woodward and Robert Costa surfaced the call in their book Peril. So that is a specific call with three sources that is not on the logs. So that's a call. There's no record of it in what the Trump administration has turned over to investigators. Okay, next call. House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy. We know about this call. Trump had an explosive call with the House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy right in the middle of the attack. Representative Jamie Herrera Butler confirmed the call, said McCarthy briefed her on the call. That's the conversation where Trump, responding to the GOP leader sounding the alarm of violence, remarked, "Well, Kevin, I guess the people are more upset about the election than you are," according to Butler. That's a specific call that we have independently sourced. It's not on the records turned over by Trump. So that's another call that took place during those 7 hours. Senators Mike Lee and Tommy Tuberville. Senator Mike Lee told the Salt Lake Tribune he got a call from Trump moments after the Capitol Police stopped the Senate proceedings. I believe that was around 1:30 p.m. Eastern. It was a crazy day. I'm going from memory, but it's certainly within that 7 hour window of missing calls. The caller ID indicated the call was coming from the White House, according to Lee, but he didn't know it was Trump until he picked up. According to Lee, Trump misdialed and was trying to call Senator Tommy Tuberville, so Lee handed his phone to the Alabama senator. In the wake of the attack, Tuberville revealed he told Trump in the call that Pence was being evacuated. Third call, missing from the logs, Trump was on the phone. This call from the White House. So this was not with a burner phone. The caller ID was the White House. Jim Jordan. Now, this one we've spoken about so many times, and Jim Jordan has been extremely dishonest and deceptive about how many times did you speak to Trump on that day. The official call logs include one call between Trump and Jordan at 9:24 a.m. We now know, with the benefit of hindsight, Jordan has admitted to more than one call that day, and at least one was during the attack. So at minimum, we know that there's one acknowledged Jim Jordan call not reflected in the records turned over by Trump. And then lastly, Congressman Matt Gaetz. Politico reported that Gaetz was on one of Jordan's calls to Trump, during which they urged Trump to call off the supporters storming the building. So Gaetz himself has refused to say if he was part of the call, but Politico, he hasn't denied it, and Politico has reported it. So again, that if that's with Jim Jordan and during the attacks, it's during that 7-hour window. These are all easily verified by public statements. And of course, I don't know if and how Republicans will even try to spin this. They will probably say it's a fishing expedition. This is a bad faith committee. It's a committee that needs to be ended. It's politically oriented because they don't have any Republicans other than two anti-Trump Republicans. That's because they refuse to be on it. Everybody else refused to be on it. So we do have the ability to figure out at least some of these calls. Records can be cross-checked. And then from the standpoint of the investigative committee, if they successfully subpoena the phone records of the people on the other ends of these phone calls, then they would be able to say, well, here's a call in Jim Jordan's phone log, and it's not reflected in what the White House gave us. That's a call that they have hidden from us. So clearly that's something that they can do. And this is stinking more and more like Watergate. And we're going to talk about that a little later. Let's now dig in a little bit to the whole burner phone thing. So the next piece of the 7 hours of missing call logs story is the obviously unbelievable claim from Donald Trump that he doesn't even know what burner phones are. So as a reminder, yesterday we reported to you White House records turned over to the January 6th committee are missing about 7.5 hours of logs. This is a key 7.5 hours while the insurrection was going on. And one of the sort of notable things that came out of this was that Donald Trump denied having any idea what a burner phone is. In a statement Monday night, Trump said, "I have no idea what a burner phone is. To the best of my knowledge, I have never even heard the term." This stunk to high heaven. And when I told you this yesterday, the story we didn't know about John Bolton's recent comments, it was not plausible that Trump didn't know the term burner phone. And it was certainly not plausible that Trump doesn't know about disposable phones. If you wanted to be as charitable as possible and give Trump the benefit of the doubt, which I don't know why we would do at this point, but let's say we did, you might be able to argue Trump knows of them as disposable phones and he doesn't know or remember the term burner phone. But that it wasn't even believable. It really wasn't. We now have new reporting from Donald Trump's former national security advisor, who says he specifically remembers Trump using the term burner phones. And of course, this is completely believable and completely obvious, and it's what we suspected right away. CBS News reporting, John Bolton, the former national security advisor to Trump, told CBS News he heard Trump use the phrase burner phones in several discussions and that Trump did know exactly what it meant. In a response, Trump said he never heard the phrase burner phone. "I have no idea what a burner phone is. To the best of my knowledge, I've never even heard the term." Bolton says he and Trump spoke about how people have used burner phones to avoid having their calls scrutinized. I mean, you know, I know Trump's not the brightest, but it did not pass the sniff test that Trump didn't know what a burner phone was. And this is increasingly reeking of Watergate. I would encourage everybody in the audience who is disturbed by this story, as you should be, and you want to read a little bit more about it, there's a really good new piece in The New Republic by Alex Shepard called Trump's Missing Phone Records Have a Familiar Stink of Criminality. And in that article, Alex Shepard discusses the analogies here to Watergate and mentions that in terms of the amount of missing phone data, it is more than 20 times longer in terms of a gap in the records than what there was in the Watergate tapes. I don't know how many have recently reviewed Watergate and all of its different elements, but one of the things about Watergate was a gap in tapes, which ultimately scandalized Richard Nixon and led to his resignation in 1974. And the gap in the record with these Trump phone calls is more than 20 times bigger than the gap in that in the Watergate tapes. The difference, of course, is that at the time, Richard Nixon was president, and so the entire scandal precipitated his resignation. Trump is no longer president. And of course, you and I would like to think, if people are reasonable, Republicans would say, okay, even if I liked his tax plan, this is just too much. I can't vote for the guy in 2024. Unfortunately, that's not the case. And not only are there tens of millions of voters, at least, still willing to vote for Donald Trump, still eager to vote for Donald Trump in 2024, they become more emboldened by these stories. If you go and you look at right-wing YouTube, right-wing Twitter, right-wing TikTok, shows like Real America's Voice and Newsmax and all these different places, you see that they are actually emboldened by these stories, saying these are part of the witch hunt attacks meant to take down Trump unfairly. We renew our support for him as a result of this investigation, which is really scary stuff. We'll have all these articles and more on our Instagram. You can follow us there at David Pakman Show. We'll take a break. We will talk about that Rick Scott 11-point wacky plan after this short break. So I don't know how many of you remember, it was a really big day in my life, but it may not have been in your life. About a month ago, I did a breakdown of Rick Scott's 11-point plan to save America. And it was notable because it sort of seemed like in a sea of cultural issues and talking points that make no sense, a Republican was actually putting together a policy proposal. And this is the Republican Florida Senator Rick Scott. So we looked at it. The proposal was absolutely absurd. If Rick Scott got his way, the policies he proposes would be incredibly damaging to the country. A lot of them weren't even really policies. They were just, again, cultural issues masked as policy. But we reviewed it because it was actually something apparently substantive from Republicans, and it was a crazy and disastrous proposal. Rick Scott went on Fox News, and on Fox News, reporter John Roberts calls out Rick Scott for some of the things in his plan. And it's not, you know, that John Roberts is the be-all end-all of journalism or whatever, but here he did a good job of saying, here's stuff that's in your proposal. Rick Scott tries to call them Democratic talking points, and John Roberts is like, no, no, no. It's straight out of your proposal, and it is. And Rick Scott doesn't know what way, you know, what is up, what is down. It doesn't make any sense. This is how flaccid these proposals are, where as soon as they are questioned about them, they say, well, those are just Democratic spin. No, it's in your proposal. Check this out.
Because Putin's such a thug, a murderous thug.
All right, let's switch to politics now, because there's a lot that we've got to look forward to between now and November the 8th. You recently put out an 11-point plan to rescue America.
Right.
Two of the big points of which are, quote, all Americans should pay some income tax to have skin in the game, even if a small amount. Currently, over half of Americans pay no income tax. It also says all federal legislation sunsets in 5 years. If a law is worth keeping, Congress can pass it again. So that would raise taxes on half of Americans and potentially sunset programs like Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. Why would you propose something like that in an election year?
Sure. Well, John, that's, of course, the Democrat talking points. It's a
no,
limited plan.
No, it's in the plan. It's in the plan.
But here's let's think about reality for a second. Let's talk about Medicare.
Senator, hang on, John. So it's not a Democratic talking point. It's in the plan.
And also in the plan.
Okay, so now notice how he first said it's a lie. And then when he can't say anything other than, well, yeah, it is in the plan, he says, well, there's also other things in the plan. Now, what John Roberts is saying is true. When Rick Scott says everyone should pay at least some federal income tax, you have to remember there are lots of people that end up paying no federal income tax because between a low income and the standard deduction and child tax credits and whatever, you end up paying zero federal income tax. Now, we have to remember that these folks pay a lot of other taxes. They pay sales taxes. They pay excise taxes if they have a vehicle. They have car registration fees. They may pay state taxes. It's not that they don't pay taxes. This is a popular right-wing talking point to say the rich are paying so much and half the country pays no taxes. Well, okay, you're entitled to child tax credits and the standard deduction, et cetera. But it is part of their talking point as to why the tax system needs to be changed. Rick Scott is then confronted. Well, that is going to increase taxes for half of Americans per your own favorite talking points. And Rick Scott says, well, that's Democratic propaganda. No, it's actually in your plan. Then he switches to, well, here's other stuff that's also in my plan.
Says we ought to every year talk about exactly how we're going to fix Medicare and Social Security. Here's what's happening. No one that I know of wants to sunset Medicare or Social Security. But what we're doing is we don't even talk about it. Medicare goes bankrupt in 4 years. Social Security goes bankrupt in 12 years. I think we ought.
Remember that they've been using these bankruptcy talking points for a long time, and they're all completely untrue.
To figure out how we preserve those programs. Every program that we care about, we ought to stop and take the time to preserve those programs.
Now, understand what he's saying here. He claims, I don't want to get rid of Social Security and Medicare. No, I don't want to do that. But I do want us to debate whether to keep them on a regular basis. So let's rephrase what he's saying. He's saying, I want it to be on the table that we might gut or eliminate Social Security and or Medicare. That he wants that possibility, at least.
I mean, I just fought the postal bill because it put more responsibility on Medicare and took it off the Postal Service and put Medicare in a worse position. Now, let's go back. Let's talk about taxes for a second. I'll put my record up against anybody on tax cuts. I cut taxes and fees 100 times as governor. But
now understand that that's such a meaning. I don't even want to waste time on this, but this is how politicians lie, where he goes, well, listen, when I was governor, I cut taxes and fees 100 times. You guys understand that that can mean, okay, he's cutting the vehicle registration fee from $50 to $45. That's one cut. He is changing the excise tax rate from 1.05% to 1.03%. That's a second cut. These are sort of meaningless statements, and politicians are so good at just offhandedly mentioning them.
Here's what's unfair. We have people that don't, that could go to work and have figured out how to have government pay their way. That's not right.
So that's actually what this is about. It's about cutting welfare and all sorts of different programs. So understand that there's some people who say, oh, Republicans want to kill Americans by putting people in genocide camps or whatever. And then some Republicans say it's Democrats who want to put people in genocidal concentration camps or whatever. No. The way it works is Republicans want to slowly chip away at programs that enable people to live in a dignified way and take away the ability of folks to afford unexpected costly events or just the cost of being alive. And this is the way they do it. Listen, we should look at whether Medicare really makes sense to keep. We should justify whether Social Security should keep going. We should look at food stamps. We should make sure that everybody's paying some federal tax, which means the poor, make the poor pay more in taxes. That's how you do it. It's not, you know, these 1984-esque FEMA camps or whatever else. It's these little cuts to take away people's dignity. And I don't know how much the Fox audience realizes the dishonesty and the absurd nature of what Rick Scott is proposing and his complete inability to defend it here. But the best way to dismantle all of these so-called plans is you go line by line and explain to them, this is what it would do. How do you justify it? Half the time they'll say, that's not really what's in my plan. And then you go, no, it is. Here it is. And then the other half, they'll just explain it away with very transparently bogus talking points. We've spoken before on the program about Lara Logan. Lara Logan is she at least was a journalist, and she did some really good work when she was with 60 Minutes. Something happened to Lara Logan, and I know that many say, David, what happened is she was brutally assaulted when doing coverage in the Middle East, and she has PTSD. That's what happened. Maybe it is. I don't know. Something happened to Lara Logan where she is now on Fox Nation repeating some of the most rancid conspiracy theories that we have seen in the political media space for the last 10 years. And most recently, Lara Logan suggested that Darwinian evolution may be a hoax funded by Jews. Now, she for a while now has been using some of these anti-Semitic tropes and talking points of a globalist. You almost, when you hear the word globalist, you almost have to say globalist, like Alex Jones. Globalist stuff, Rothschild, all these different things. She appeared on, honestly, I don't even know what this is. It's a show called And We Know. And she suggested that Darwinian evolution may be a Jewish-funded hoax. Listen to this.
So now you've gone from being a farmer who may not be able to farm efficiently, who may not be able to feed as many people, but guess what? He could grow food year after year after year. Because who created seeds that are renewable? Like truly, like who created life that is truly renewable? What is the only thing on earth that is actually renewable? It's life. And they can, you know, go back to the Big Bang Theory and Darwin. I mean, when I found out, does anyone know when who employed Darwin, where Darwinism comes from?
Go ahead.
Well, I mean, you know, look it up. The Rothschilds.
It
goes right back to 10 Downing Street.
All the way.
Oh, boy.
The same people who employed Darwin. Mm-hmm. And that's when Darwin, you know, wrote his theory of evolution and so on and so on.
Guys, did you know that? You know, what she's suggesting here is the theory of Darwinian evolution didn't come from Darwin doing real science. Jews, the Rothschilds, hired Darwin. And then all of a sudden he writes this theory of evolution and then, what?
And I'm not saying that none of that is true.
Right.
I'm just saying Darwin was hired by someone to come up with a theory,
correct,
right? Based on evidence, okay, fine. But, you know, even the people...
Fine. I guess it was based on evidence.
All the scientists, all of the people that can take you back to the Big Bang, what is the one question they can never, ever, ever answer? They can never tell you whatever that was, whether it's the molecules or the energy or, you know, all that stuff. All these scientists like that, you know, that evil, horrible person who's the science advisor to Klaus Schwab at the World Economic Forum, who says there's no such thing as freedom. There's no such, you know, there's randomness, but that's not freedom and blah, blah, blah. There's probability and there's this and there's that.
Right.
They can explain it away any way you like. But how did those things come into being? You know, and it was a combination of, it's that question of what came first, the chicken or the egg, right? You can't answer that scientifically.
Now, as many of you already know, this is a sort of God of the gaps hypothesis or talking point, which is any phenomena that cannot yet be answered by science, or maybe never will, but it doesn't make a difference. You put God into those gaps. So we don't know now what was there before everything. I mean, it's a very complicated question. It's a scientific question. It's a philosophical question. It's a big question. That doesn't mean, you know, it's Jesus or Zeus or whatever. There's no evidence for that. When it comes to Lara Logan, first of all, this is disgusting, right? I mean, Jews funded the hoax of Darwinian evolution, even if it was maybe based in some fact. That's her idea. Do you think that she started believing this stuff so then Fox hired her? Or is it that Fox hired her and it got her to start spouting this stuff? It's hard to say which way it goes, and there may be some way in which it's both. But this is a real life cautionary tale about a lot of different things, about how right-wing media will rot your brain. And listen, if PTSD is part of what's going on with Lara Logan, it's a cautionary tale about that as well. And it's not for any of us to diagnose what's going on, but I feel it relevant to mention that she did suffer an insane situation. And not long after that, these have started to be her ideas. So make of it what you will. No comment from Fox about these completely outrageous comments by Lara Logan. All right, let's take a few minutes to look at this, the rest of this very dangerous interview that Donald Trump gave to Real America's Voice. You might recall that about a half hour ago or 40 minutes ago at the start of the show or earlier in the show, we looked at another request from Donald Trump to Vladimir Putin. Putin's invading Ukraine, and Trump says to Putin, "Hey, can you get me some dirt on Hunter Biden?" That happened yesterday. It's not 2017 or whenever it was, 2016, 2015, Trump saying, "Hey, Russia, if you're listening." This interview in total was absolutely sick and disgusting. Very clearly, Donald Trump extremely sensitive about the small size of his crowd on Saturday at his rally. Listen to this.
Stands it. They lie. They cheat. I've never seen anything like it. I never knew it was that corrupt. I knew there was a lot of fake stuff going on. Yeah. But since I got into politics, I had a lot of media before, you know, with The Apprentice and all the things I've done and the business. But I've never seen anything like it. They will not write a good story. I have great poll numbers. They don't put them out. I have great things happening. Like
super confident alpha male, huh, guys?
Just the other day, we had a fantastic rally in Georgia. Some guy from, I think it's NPR or something. I never heard of the person. Said, "Oh, the rally wasn't well attended." The sheriff just said it was 25,000 people. He said it was a couple of thousand people or less than 5,000 people. We had less than 5,000 people, and we had 5,000 people in the first few rows. I think you were there. Your people, yeah. Your cameramen are just saying, "Yeah, sir, that rally was packed."
They said, "Sir, the rally was just absolutely packed." So it was it was the smallest crowd for a Trump rally, I think, in 6 years. And Trump very, very sensitive about it. Trump continuing to play up the story of inflation and supply chain issues, but playing it up with just weird talking points that don't make any sense. And of course, it's very clear that Trump doesn't have any idea how the real world works. Take a listen to this.
An example, supply chain. You go to a store, they don't have bread. We're like a third world country. They don't have things. You go to buy something at Tiffany. You go to buy something at a hardware store. High, low.
I love that. It's like, listen, I don't know that you've ever been to a grocery store to buy bread. And I don't know that you've ever been to a hardware store looking for a drywall anchor. But in the middle, he says, if you go to Tiffany, which is not exactly, you know, relatable to most people.
They don't have product. They say, even me, when I order things like for furnishings, for a building or something.
Trump's regularly ordering tchotchkes off of Amazon.
They say it's going to take 9 months to get it. Used to be like same day service. Supply chain. We never even heard the term.
Now, of course, we did. Many of us, you know, in the business field, we back even in business school, we would do case studies on supply chain. But Trump says we never heard it before. This is maybe my favorite part of the interview. Dave Weigel is a reporter who's a friend of the show. He's a really good guy. I've known Dave Weigel for a really long time. Here, Trump doesn't like what Dave Weigel had to say. Check this out.
Alleys, you can't even get into them. The nope. People get their six, and I have to put up with this. I had the Washington Post write a story that a rally I was giving in an arena, that the arena was empty. It was a man that you know very well in the Washington Post, and it was empty about 10 hours before.
He will eventually name Dave, so just keep listening.
Sitting there, and he showed an empty, thousands of people outside waiting to get in. Yeah. And then they came, and he had to do an apology, actually, because the arena was packed. And you know who went after him? The people in the arena, because they saw it, that it was an empty arena, and you couldn't. I mean, they used the steps as seats. It was thousands and thousands of people.
Right.
More than, far more than an NBA game. His name was Weigel or Weigel for the Washington Post. And he had to do an apology.
I can assure you that Dave Weigel is absolutely loving this. Trump also says Democrats are, quote, bad on religion.
But it's like Florida. Everyone said, oh, Florida, Florida. But I won in like a landslide. The way you win is you have to win them, because when they have no voter ID, defund the police, sanctuary cities, weak military, we're going to raise your taxes, no energy independence, all things that were all done. And they're against it.
Now, what is really interesting about this is every single one of those claims, we could actually go through them, you know, one at a time. Trump actually says, if we look at the subtitles here, we have no voter ID. Well, actually, there's plenty of places that have voter ID. The issue is the implementation of voter ID. Defund the police. No serious Democrats are actually looking to defund the police. Sanctuary cities. These are municipal decisions that are made, and it doesn't have anything to do with the federal government, as Donald Trump claims that it does. Weak military. Democrats keep rubber stamping military budgets, just like do Republicans. Raise your taxes. Well, not on people earning under $400,000. And then, of course, no energy independence. We produced as much oil as we used in 2020 and also in 2021 under Joe Biden. I mean, all of these things are not true, but his followers don't care.
That were all done. And they're against it. Bad on religion. Bad on the Second Amendment. Bad on oil. Think of it. They said, I'm going to have a close race in Texas. But they're against God, right? You just look at it. God, guns, and oil. I won Texas in a record, right?
No, there was no record. Actually, Trump won Texas by quite a small margin for a Republican. And this is the difficulty when we say, we just have to talk to these people. David, just talk to these people and they'll see reason. There are so many lies upon lies. I mean, it's a throwaway in here, right? It's a throwaway that I won Texas by a record. No, you didn't. And it's not even the point of the actual story. And so it becomes almost a physical impossibility to unwind the lie upon lie upon lie. One last clip here, and this is an interesting policy thing. It started to be floated by Matt Gaetz, the radical Republican congressman under investigation for child sex trafficking. Trump's former propagandist Steve Bannon has talked about this. What if Republicans win the House in 2022, in a few months, and then they make Donald Trump the Speaker of the House? Because remember, you don't have to be a member of Congress to be Speaker of the House. Trump actually says here he's not interested in it.
Oh, I want to ask a follow-up while we're talking about Congress, because these comments went viral. At the rally, when Congressman Matt Gaetz brought up you being nominated for Speaker of the House.
Speaker.
And your reaction intrigued me, because I couldn't tell one way or the other how you felt about that. Your reaction.
No, I think that it's not something I wanted. A lot of people bring it up. It's brought up all the time.
Yeah.
No, it's not something I want to do. I want to look at what's happening, and then we're going to be doing something else. No, it's not something I would.
We're going to be doing something else. You guys know why Trump really doesn't want to be Speaker. So, okay. His ego would not allow him to go from having been president to being Speaker of the House. Fine. I totally get that. That makes sense from an ego standpoint. Being Speaker of the House actually is more work, the way Trump would have to be doing it, and compared to the way Trump did the job of the president. Because as president, in theory, you would imagine being president's a very, very busy job. Trump had hours of TV time in the morning, and then he would often spend the afternoon tweeting before he was banned from Twitter, and so on and so forth. So it would be a lot more work for Trump to be the Speaker of the House. But interesting that he's saying, I just don't want to do it. And that basically puts an end to that discussion. I mean, if Trump doesn't want to do it, he doesn't want to do it. So there's Trump. Very strange interview. His mood seems sort of altered, and granting just any old interview these days. And I think that we will soon see a greater level of involvement in the 2022 midterms. And it's really important that the left have a strategy in place, because otherwise they actually, as cartoonishly ignorant as they are, they're going to run away with it unless the left gets it together. Ted Cruz appeared on the Laura Ingraham show on Fox News last night. And this is, if you were to look up projection in the dictionary, it should have an interactive video clip of Ted Cruz's appearance on Fox News last night. So let me set this up for you. One of the phenomena that we've noticed with Republicans over the last 5 or 6 years is whenever they really start harping on Democrats are doing X or Democrats will do X, we need to very seriously look at whether what they mean is we are doing this or we plan to do this. And I'll give you some examples. Donald Trump, and I know many of you have heard this, Donald Trump said so many times, we can't vote for Hillary in 2016 because she can't be trusted with her email. She's using personal email. She can't be trusted with classified and secret information, and on and on. And it really didn't make sense. And it was actually Trump who planned to do all of those very things. Trump, completely untrustworthy with secret information from allies, spilling secrets from allies to a Russian spy recruiter in the Oval Office. Many in Trump's inner circle, including Mark Meadows, Ivanka Trump, Jared Kushner, using private email while they were working for Donald Trump. Trump eating notes that are supposed to be preserved as records. Trump power flushing 10 to 15 times notes that are supposed to be kept for presidential records. So when he starts talking, when they start talking about the left is going to do this thing, we should be like, are they actually doing it? And often the answer is yes. For 6 months, Trump saying they're going to do fraud in the 2020 election. We can't do vote by mail. They're going to win and they're going to steal it and all this different stuff. And of course, it was Trump and his acolytes who filed 60 frivolous legal complaints, insisted that vans and machines and all these different things mean that they actually had the election stolen from them. They were the ones trying to steal the election. So now, with that context in mind, listen to what, with a straight face, Ted Cruz says last night on Fox News. He has no shame. Listen very closely.
You cannot accept it as a result.
They know they're going to lose. And Nancy Pelosi is not going to go quietly. She's going to scream. She's already preparing to scream the election was stolen. And by the way, what she means by stolen is people showed up to vote against Democrats. That's what stealing the election is. And remember, Democrats don't believe in democracy.
This, how can he say this with a straight face? This is exactly what they did in 2020. When they said in 2020 it was stolen, what it was that more Democrats came out to vote. That's what happened. When they say Nancy Pelosi is planning to claim it was stolen, no, that's what you guys did. And that's exactly what they're going to do again, depending on the results in November. Here's a bonus Ted Cruz clip here where he complains he hasn't spoken with Joe Biden personally, and that's like a problem in some way.
You know, the question you just asked, Eric, I actually get to ask that almost every day. Somebody says, who's really running things? And let me tell you the scary thing. I have no idea. So Biden's been president, what, 15 months? In that entire time, I have not spoken with him once. And that's true of almost every Republican senator. I got to say, that's weird.
Why does Biden have to speak to them to show he's really the president? Why would Biden speak to Ted Cruz? Ted Cruz is out of his mind. And this is a really new common thing on the right. Kyle Rittenhouse has also been pulling this. Clearly, Joe Biden is doing something wrong because he hasn't met with Kyle Rittenhouse. And it's like, why would Biden meet with Kyle Rittenhouse?
Or, you know, is calling you out on Twitter. What would you like them to know most about your story?
Right.
Yeah, I was attacked. I was 17 years old. I was attacked and had to defend myself. And I'm not a racist. I'm not a white supremacist. I'm not a domestic terrorist. I'm not a murderer. And anybody who wants to sit down and have a conversation, I'm more than open. I reached out to Joe Biden several times. Crickets, nothing. He still hasn't replied. So it just shows how much of a man he is to not sit down and talk to a 19-year-old.
Why does Joe Biden have to talk to Kyle Rittenhouse? Why does Joe Biden have to talk to Ted Cruz? These people are so self-centered, thinking everything is about them. It is truly unbelievable. But Ted Cruz, apparently with absolutely no sense of irony or shame, showing up and saying, guys, if we're not careful, Democrats might try to claim they won even though they didn't. Yeah, well, they'd be taking a lesson from you, wouldn't they, Ted? We have a voicemail number. That number is 2192-DAVID-P. Voicemails pouring in about the Will Smith slap of Chris Rock at the Oscars on Sunday. People wanting to talk about race. People wanting to talk about domestic violence. People wanting to talk about defending one's honor. Here is someone who's just baffled by some of the response we've seen to the incident. Take a listen to this.
Hi, David. I'm like truly baffled by the responses I'm seeing to the Will Smith slap. I'm watching a video by Jocko Willink right now, who I actually think is the perfect example for everything that is wrong in America right now. I guess he wants every man, woman, and child in America to be in a Navy SEAL platoon and to live their lives like they were overseas and tasked with killing an innocent civilian family or something like that. So slaps are good to him. There's just a way of letting off steam. You talk smack, you get smacked. So we're all about smacking people nowadays.
It really is weird. Now, I think it's important for context to show that we now have, I mean, listen, we can get polling very quickly on any topic in the United States. Most people are taking the side of Chris Rock in the sense that they're saying, listen, he told a joke and there's no justification for the physical violence. But even some people on Twitter have tweeted to me and they've said, listen, Jada Pinkett Smith has taken a lot of crap over the years. Well, what? Are you justifying violence? Because that's really what it's about. And at the end of the day, these are millionaires sitting in the front row at the Oscars, where you know there's some degree of like a kind of roast scenario there. Alopecia is not what we would call a disability. It is a medical condition, and it's not even really clear what Chris Rock knows about it. And you can talk whatever you want, but we're talking about words here. And then we're talking about an adult walking on stage and slapping Chris Rock. And it is weird. It is baffling to some degree how quickly some are jumping to defend acts of physical violence. It's disturbing. We've got a great bonus show for you today. Russia is claiming that they're scaling down military action in Kyiv, but I think we're right to be skeptical of it. We'll talk about what we know. Joe Biden has also made lynching a hate crime in the United States. And some House Republicans are angry that Madison Cawthorn is telling stories about coke-laden orgies in Washington, D.C. We will talk about all of those stories on the bonus show. Sign up at joinpacman.com.
WRCT, in sound from way out.
DJ Haim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
Depose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
This is DJ Haim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call jazz.
Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-syllable word.
Cost. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM.
My fellow Americans, I would just like to say now, as an expert on the subject, that WRCT Pittsburgh does not blow. Thank you.
WRCT in sound from way out.
RCT Pittsburgh, meaty and full of flavor since 1949.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet. Because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
For those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet. Because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
For those of you concerned with your health and the new U.S. For those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
Process which is ongoing, but these are still words, no specifics so far.
As Russia's war in Ukraine enters its sixth week, Russia appears set to launch major new offensive in the Donbas region, while Russia moves to draft 134,000 new conscripts. This comes as the UN says Russia may be committing war crimes by attacking civilian areas. We'll get the latest. Then President Biden calls on Congress to immediately approve new emergency COVID-19 funding after Congress eliminated pandemic funding.
This isn't partisan. It's medicine. Americans are back to living their lives again. We can't surrender that now. Congress, please act. You have to act immediately. The consequences of inaction are severe.
With COVID-19 coverage ending for the uninsured, we'll also look at how the pandemic's led to a renewed push for Medicare for all from progressive lawmakers and activists, including Adi Barkin, who was diagnosed with terminal ALS in 2016.
When we lost 3,000 lives on September 11, we responded by reorganizing our national security system, launching a global war on terror, and conducting two massive invasions and occupations. 300 times more people have died in this pandemic, but we have not marshaled our national energy to build a better healthcare system. It is a scandal and it is a shame.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. As Russia's invasion of Ukraine enters its sixth week, Russian President Vladimir Putin signed a decree to draft 134,000 new conscripts into Russia's military. On Wednesday, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky warned Russia is preparing a major offensive in the Donbas region in eastern Ukraine. This comes just days after Russia announced it's repositioning some troops from Kyiv and Chernihiv, though attacks have continued on both cities. Ukraine is now sending dozens of buses into the besieged city of Mariupol to evacuate residents and deliver aid. The convoy headed into the city after Russia declared a one-day ceasefire. For the past month, Russian attacks have devastated the strategically located southern port city, where over 150,000 people have been left without food, heat, power, or running water. Local officials say as many as 5,000 people have died. Residents have described dire conditions in Mariupol.
We've been striving for well-being, and now we are dirt poor, standing by the fire, homeless. How long is this going to take? We have nowhere to take a shower. We are drinking water from God knows where, and who knows what kind of bacteria it has in it. You have to walk far to get good water. This is no life for a retiree.
On Wednesday, the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, Michelle Bachelet, says Russia's attack on civilian areas may amount to war crimes. The former Chilean president also accused Russia of using cluster munitions at least 24 times. The UN Human Rights Council has appointed a commission to investigate possible war crimes. On the diplomatic front, a top Ukrainian has said Zelensky and Putin could soon hold a presidential peace summit, but Russia has downplayed the claim. We'll have more on the war in Ukraine after headlines. The head of the World Food Program's warning Russia's invasion of Ukraine could trigger the largest global food crisis in 80 years. David Beasley told the UN Security Council Tuesday that half the grain his agency purchases each year comes from Ukraine. He said the war has imperiled efforts to feed 120